Welcome to another episode of Residentially Speaking, a podcast dedicated to bringing you interesting and informative content from key builders, dealers, thought leaders, and influencers across the residential construction industry. I'm your host, Alan Hubble.
I think one of the reasons why we were successful is we embraced who we were. And what we were is we were a multi-platform publisher. We didn't fall in love with one part of the business rather than another. We really let the market dictate on where we needed to go and where we needed to be. And we've seen tremendous changes in our business, you know, around events and custom work and places like that. So our business has completely transformed.
Joining me on the podcast today is Tony Mancini. Tony was founder and principal at SGC Horizon, a media and publishing firm in the construction industry. You may know their brands such as Pro Builder, Professional Remodeler, or Building Design and Construction. SGC Horizon was recently sold to Endeavor Business Media, and we'll get into that a little bit in the podcast. But know that Tony's an enthusiastic and innovative industry leader in this industry, and you'll want to hear from him. He comes to us with 30 years of experience that span senior leadership roles in leading national publishers like Reed Construction Media and the McGraw-Hill Companies. We'll start with Tony's background and establish his credentials and his experiences that allow him to opine on industry trends. So then we'll get into the industry trends and talk about what's happening in the media and publishing world within the construction space, focusing primarily on residential construction. We'll finish with a little bit of AI. We'll have some fun along the way when I poke fun at Tony's alma mater, as I always do. And then we'll close with some various comments. So with that, welcome. Thanks for joining. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Residentially Speaking, that's coming up. Tony Mancini, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Alan. I've heard so much around the DuPont EDU Hub. It's incredible to be part of it today.
Yeah, no, really glad to have you. I was thinking about this. You know, we've had guests on here. Obviously, we've talked a fair bit of building science, energy efficiency, high-performance housing. We've talked to builders. We've talked to folks in the channel, lumberyards, other influencers. But we have not yet talked media and publishing. So I think it's a great discussion topic. It's something to be of interest to our listeners. And we're excited to jump into it with you. I think of nobody better to bring their knowledge to us than you.
Perfect. I look forward to it.
Great. So for those who may not know of you, you're a stalwart in the industry. You've been around, I'm just going to say, a long time, like a number of us, and a wide variety of experiences. But tell us a little bit, before we jump into how you got into media, tell us a little bit about maybe your background, maybe how you got into the construction industry. And was that by choice? Was that by happenstance? I'm sure there's a story behind it. So for folks who don't know you, what give us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I was graduating from the University of Pittsburgh, which is...
Sorry to hear that, yeah.
And I was looking for my job, a first job. And so I was interviewing with a lot of different industries. I really didn't have a destination of where I wanted to go or what I was going to do. My sister, older sister, worked at CertainTeed and got me... I did a couple of different interviews, but the one with CertainTeed, I just really liked the whole industry and the company a lot. You know, CertainTeed's an amazing company and always has been. So that was my entry right from college into the construction market, which was great. The amazing thing back then, Alan, was I had a 6-month training program before I did a job.
Really?
In today's world, would be like, you've got to be kidding me. But it really allowed me to really understand the marketplace, builders, remodelers, but also two-step distribution, like how that worked in the construction industry. Because it's a weird industry if you're not in it. Like, why do you go through a middleman to get there when you're trying to sell the builder or remodeler?
Sure.
So for me, it was an amazing kickoff point into the construction market.
And was that a sales job? Was that?
Yeah, marketing? That was. Yeah, They called it territory manager. And then you actually, after 6 months, then you actually had somebody that mentored you. And then after 1 year, I went into my own territory. So I started in Atlanta, Georgia, and then went up to DC and had my own territory at that point.
Okay. And what product line? Is there a category?
Roofing and insulation. Nice.
So Okay, nice. Yeah. And so did you, how long were you with CertainTeed? Did you progress through a number of roles there, or?
I did. I was there for about 4.5 years, did different roles and moved up to, territory manager and then up from there. And then another company called Muncie Products, which is now Henry, I worked for them. So I was on the building material side for about 8 years.
Okay, great. And then so you saw a lot there, customer interactions, experiences, so forth. Did you leave CertainTeed or Muncie and go to into the media publishing space, or
I did.
you did?
And I didn't know anything about it, to be fair. A headhunter called me and said, "Hey, would you take this interview?" And it was with McGraw Hill. And McGraw Hill has a lot of different divisions. This was their suites division. And I'm not sure if you're familiar
Oh
with.
yeah. Yeah,
Yeah. Well,
we had a suites page for a number of years
did
until
you?
recently. Yeah.
Well, suites have to be like 125 years old now or
Yeah.
something, and maybe longer. And so suites puts out catalogs for specifications for architects. And it crosses all the markets. It's commercial, but it's also, they had them for home builders and they had them for multifamily and across the board. So I listened to the proposition from them and I'm like, this sounds really interesting. This sounds good. So I decided to try it. It was a little bit of a jump for me. I had not really had much experience either knowing people or doing anything like that.
Oh, that's cool. So there wasn't not much digital around then. I'm sure we'll get to that.
There was not. In
All
fact,
print.
the Sweets catalogs, I don't know if you remember green.
Oh
There was
yeah.
this green thing that took over people's offices. I think there were like 20, honestly, 26 different volumes that,
Wow.
were all on those different codes. And so it was the print giant of the world, I think.
Right. So who were you? Who was your customer then? Who were you selling to?
So I was calling on building product manufacturers.
Okay,
So I went from being with building product manufacturers to calling on building product manufacturers.
yeah, that makes sense. And then so from there, so now, okay, now you're calling on that. So now you got a little wider exposure to the building product folks.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, Alan, I loved it from day one. And this is what I really loved about it. And the reason why I stayed on the media side for the rest of my career is you're calling on the best companies in the US and you're sitting in there and you're strategizing around their marketing and go-to-market strategy and what they want to do and what they want to accomplish. I found it fascinating. So instead of just doing that for one company, your own company, being able to do that with companies like DuPont or Anderson or Westlake or Cornerstone or Hardie or all those people, it was amazing. And so I found that very stimulating and very enlightening also.
Okay. Did you have national accounts, or were you just, or
Yeah, so
territory? It was national.
yep, I worked on what was called Suites International. So it was US companies that did business in Canada and overseas. So these were all the people that were trying to get their products into different countries. So I was calling on all the large US companies that were using export as part of their marketing process.
Huh. Okay. And did Suites update once a year or a couple times a year?
Once a year.
Once a year, okay. Yeah, it's come a long way.
Can you imagine in today's world a once
Right.
a year update? Like, hey, Sweets is coming out in September 15th with their next
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's, yeah. So you got, I mean, you were right there at the beginning, right? You know,
right there, that
I mean,
one job.
some really fundamental experiences.
Yeah.
And so I know you spent time, you ended up at Reed Construction Media at some point. Did you go from McGraw Hill and the Suites experience
I
to
did.
Reed? You did.
Yep, I really did. And that really, so I think that really kind of formed the big change in my career. So Dean Horowitz, who I believe you've met. So Dean hired me on the New Jersey Turnpike. We
That's
stopped at a
great.
rest stop in a New Jersey Turnpike and we had an interview and he said, "Come on, just meet with me." And I did. And honestly, by the time I got home, he had faxed me an offer to start with the company. And it was really a game changer for me.
Yeah, and what? So it's funny. I had a performance review one time with my boss back in the day in the trunk of a rental car in front of a waffle shop, Waffle House. You never forget those experiences, you
I love Waffle Houses too. We
know.
don't
Yeah.
get, you know, you and I don't get them very much up here, but
Oh
when we see them, they're like, "Oh, we got to stop."
yeah. That's right. So you jumped over to Reed, and what was your role there?
Yeah, so it was really, I really started as the sales manager and then moved all the way up. So I started with Reed in 1996. So, and that was strictly, I think the thing I liked the most about it was strictly with the construction, residential construction group. So Pro Builder, Pro Remodeler, Custom Builder, Housing Zone, all those companies. So started on the sales management side. That's where I was brought in.
Okay. Were you always residential folk with suite, even with suites?
Suites was a mixture of commercial and residential,
Okay.
which helps because Horizon owned BD&C, Building Design and Construction. So it's always been more predominantly residential, but had commercial experience also.
Yeah. And I think that's where I first met you, is obviously at Reed in the late 2000s at some point. I think the move to SGC, which we'll talk about in a minute, hadn't come about yet. I think you were still
Right.
with Reed. Yeah. So you progressed. So tell us about your progression in Reed. You became more than sales.
Yeah,
You
I
end up.
started at sales management. I got promoted to associate publisher, so that was my first time getting up. And when you move into publisher roles at media, then you're taking care of everything. You're taking care of editorial, you're taking care of events, you're taking care of custom, you're taking care of sales. So it's a much more overview of the whole organization, which I love. So really kind of broadened my understanding of overall publishing and what it was. So we started there, went to associate publisher, and then ended up as publisher with the group.
And during that time, was digital still not much happening there? It was still kind of a print world, or?
Yeah, one of the beauties of Reed, so Reed Elsevier was, there's always claims in this world, but they said the second largest publisher in the world. And Reed, if you know Reed Elsevier was
No.
everywhere. And
Yeah.
a lot of different things that they did. They did a lot of different kind of publications. So it was really amazing around. They were great about cross-pollination. I got in their management development team. We met with the Europeans a lot, and Europe was way ahead of us on digital. So we were still like 85% print revenue, and they were down below 50 already, well, even way back then. So
Oh, wow.
they were really able to give us best practices around digital. How it works, why it works, the performance metrics, all those things. And I will say of the big accelerator, it was that with Reed Elsevier.
Really? I didn't know, from Europe.
Yep, from
Huh.
Europe.
Had no idea. Huh.
So
Interesting.
we would do a meeting in the US and they would come there, and then we would do a meeting in Europe. We would do them twice a year, and it was all about best practices, even launching websites, metrics, all those type of things.
Yeah. No, I knew Reed Elsevier was big. I had a neighbor in Pittsburgh when I lived in Pittsburgh who sold medical textbooks for them. And he is busy, I forget when his busy time was, but obviously the fall leading up to the fall semester, he had some slow times and the rest of the year,
And
He had
they
a
had
lot.
Lexis, which was a big deal. They had so much school books and stuff like that. So they were really differentiated across all the way across the markets.
All the way across, yeah. And so what happened then? So then at some point, SGC Horizon was formed. I know you were instrumental in that. I'm going to ask you to walk us through that. But was Reed wanted to exit some businesses, or how'd they make the decision to kind of get out of some of those publications?
Yeah, honestly, it was a little crazy, I will say. So this was 2010. So publishing was under a lot of pressure
Yeah.
because of this migration from print into other platforms. So a lot of companies were really, really struggling on how do we handle it. So that was number one. And then number two,
And if I just and you had the great financial crisis, right? Just
yeah, we had a
putting
great financial
stress on
crisis.
everybody.
And the construction market was not in a good spot
Sure, right. I
anymore,
remember, yeah.
as you and I can attest to. So they had 210 titles in the US. They divested out of the US 100%. They're like, we are leaving the US and we're going to concentrate on our other businesses around the world. So they basically put them up for sale, the different titles. The ones that didn't sell, and there weren't many, but there were a couple. We were one of them. They gave the opportunity to the highest ranking employee that was there to buy those properties.
Oh, very interesting. Oh, I did not know that.
How about that?
That's cool.
So
Yeah.
cool, but I will say completely frightening at the same time. So It was a 10-day offer. You have 10 days to make a decision.
Wow.
You need to pay us, and you get here's the assets that you get.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. So it was I had responsibility for the residential group, and then I had a partner, Rick Blesai, who owned construction equipment, had the opportunity around construction equipment.
Okay.
So we decided to start a new business, MB Media, where we bought the assets from Reed Elsevier. And
Oh, okay. I did not know they offered that to you. Huh.
yeah.
The chance. Yeah.
I got to tell you, Alan, I look back now and I'm like, how? I wouldn't, I don't think I would ever do it now. I think
Right.
the fact that I only had 10 days led me right into temporary insanity. Like, hey, let's just do this. Why wouldn't we do this?
Right.
But it all worked out, obviously, for the best. But it was a really crazy time, you know, in our economy and also doing that so quickly.
So how, because I want to talk about maybe some others, other than just Reed, or we'll talk about SGC in just a minute, but at that point in time when you were with Reed, what did the competitive landscape look like in media and publishing? Obviously, other print firms.
Yep. You
Was
know,
it was there other large ones? Were there some, I mean, a lot of smaller competitors? What was the state?
it's funny, and maybe all markets go through these kind of ups and downs. Is back then when Reed was around, the go-to look for media was large companies with a lot of different diversified titles, a lot of different markets, which allowed you some economy of scale around
Sure.
marketing and finance and leadership and stuff like that. So that was kind of the way that the businesses ran. Right after that, like right when Reed got out of there, Hanleywood was a perfect example, did a really good job of on that side. Right after Reed left, it went to where a lot of them broke up and got into more smaller entrepreneurial type of situations.
More targeted or focused.
Yep, exactly. And just smaller. So, like maybe construction was here, and then maybe healthcare would go to a different company. And then, so more focused on specific markets.
Interesting. So, okay. So Reed comes along, you have 10 days, you decide I'm going to do this. I'm going to buy this company. I'm going to find the financing and so forth. Walk us through those steps.
Yeah, so you pay the bill, and then there was a delivery to my house on the front porch of, and it was a little, I swear, a little black cassette about this big. And I'm like, wow, this is what I bought. This is what I bought, right?
That's it.
It had the list and the brands and the logos and, you know, all that kind of stuff, but it was all on this little
Wow.
thing. And I was like, oh my gosh. So now we own it, right? And so that was April of that year. And then we owned it. Like, what are we going to do with it? Like, we didn't want to flip.
Sure.
We didn't want to just sell it. So Rick and I talked to almost every publisher in the U.S. We, you know, what did we want to be? Where did we want to be? You know, we talked to Hanleywood. We talked to all these different companies that were in the market, and we met SGC and Ed Gillette. And Rick knew them a little bit. I didn't know them at all. And we really went through the vetting process of who do we think would be the best partner for us for what we're trying to accomplish. And we wanted to both stay active in the business and run the day-to-day business. So some people wanted to just buy the assets from us. And some people were like, no, we would love you to run it if you could.
Okay, and that's where you landed.
That's where we landed. Yep. So that was July of 2010. We were July, so we were closed for 4 months. Doesn't sound like a big deal, and I didn't think it was a big deal until I started calling on clients, and they're like, "Well, look, you were closed. We're gonna wait to see." And I'm like, "Wait a minute, it's me. It's still me." And they're like, "No, we're gonna take a little slower time making a decision." But we launched our first issue in September of 2010. So in 4 months, we basically bought, sold, transitioned, and launched. And
Wow.
in that summer of 2010.
You had to convince, I mean, you had to bring staff along with you, salespeople and so forth. What did they
Yeah.
get paid during that time? Or did you can only offer them something starting in August or something?
So many promises. So yes,
Yeah.
like,
Is that right?
please do not take, well, please don't take a job. Yeah, we have a really, you know, our team. We have a really close team, and a lot of those people have been the reason for our success. The nice thing is, Reed Elsevier was a British Dutch company. The severance packages from Reed Elsevier were astounding.
Oh, okay. So that
They
helped.
were really astounding. I think the minimum anyone got was 6 months. So, and a lot of people got a year or something like that. So, thank goodness they were
That
super
helped.
generous. I think that's kind of European way of how to handle employees, and especially when you're the one that's making the exit. So I kept open communication with everybody on the team. I think at the end we moved over like 42 people
Wow.
made the move from us from Reed over to SGC Horizon.
Wow. And then we'll just put a pin in here and maybe we'll jump into the rest of your time with SGC and the changes you've seen and so forth. Fast forward to just recently, SGC has been sold to another company. Why don't you walk us through that and kind of current state, and we'll
Yeah, sure. So they were just purchased by Endeavor, and Endeavor is a very large company with a lot of resources. And I think there's a couple reasons why it makes a lot of sense. One is we were very entrepreneurial. We were also really flat at Horizon. And in my opinion, we've probably reached about the epitome of what we could do. We've had tremendous success, but I think we needed some additional resources for accelerators into the business. And I think Endeavor is going to be really good on accelerating these businesses. They have a lot of resources. They're bringing new capabilities we didn't have before. And they also have brands that are aligned with our brands, that give us even more strength and more reach, and more content into the marketplace. So I think it's a natural progression of being kind of an entrepreneurial, yes, we can business to, hey, let's really build this business into like the biggest thing in the marketplace. And I feel like Endeavor is a really nice place for those brands to be.
happened. Yeah. And during this time, during your time at SGC, what was happening with competition? I know Hanley Wood is, they've changed their focus some, right? I don't want to speak for them, but they've been as much moving into the data world pretty hard. What's your sense as you were in SGC looking at your competitive landscape? What were you seeing?
I think one of the reasons why we were successful is we embraced who we were. And what we were is we were a multi-platform publisher. We didn't fall in love with one part of the business rather than another. We really let the market dictate on where we needed to go and where we needed to be. And we've seen tremendous changes in our business,
Yeah.
around events and custom, like with NimbleThinkers and places like that. So our business has completely transformed, but we've always been, in my opinion, a multi-platform publisher to reach a construction market.
Yeah. So the implication is competition may not have gone down. Like you differentiated in that way, right?
Yeah,
Competition
no,
was doing
Hanley
something
Wood
different.
definitely, or Zonda now, is definitely, not as interested in print and in media, what I would call traditional media, and much more data. They're 100% a data company. Good for them. I mean, it's a great place for them to live. We
Yeah.
just always felt comfortable living where we lived. I think they made the migration there, and knowing Jeff Myers and his background, it's not a surprise that's where they live on the data side.
Yeah. You mentioned Nimble Thinkers. So explain a little bit about that. And then is that typical for a media publishing firm in the space to kind of create a company like that?
I'll answer the second part. No, it isn't. And I will tell you, when we launched it, there was a little bit of angst, like, hey, are we competing
Yeah.
with our agencies in the marketplace and stuff? But as we launched it, we found out more and more is that agency needed more resources. They needed a publishing mind to help them do those things that they might not be able to do or have the ability to do. So we found it more that we dovetailed in with them rather than competed against them. And we have a lot of success stories, and you're one of them where Nimble's really been able to work closely with you and your agencies to put together plans and different things and take them to the marketplace together.
So you've progressed from, we've taken you from roofing salesperson to buying and selling a company in 10 days, buying a company in 10 days, figuring out what you want to do with it, opening up in 4 months, running it for the last decade plus here, and now moving on to other things with the sale to Endeavor. I'm going to guess if I was to ask you, what are the top three changes or differences that you see in media and publishing, since you've gotten into it? Obviously, I'm going to give you one of the answers, right? You're a Pitt guy. I need to give you one of the answers here. All
Okay.
right. One is obviously the print to digital. That's a given. That's the easy, right? That's the most obvious change. But if you had to name a couple of others that may not be obvious to people, you touched on size and focus and this kind of thing. What would be some other changes that might not be so apparent to those in the industry?
So you're right, and I'll give you some stats. So when we moved from Read over to Horizon, we were about 80% print revenue. We're now about 25% print revenue,
Wow.
and revenues are going up. So it's like,
Yeah.
so I think the first thing, and whether you're a building product manufacturer or you're a builder or you're a remodeler, it really doesn't matter. I think you have to be multi-platformed, and multi-platform meaning you need events and you need digital and you need social and you need video and you need print and you need all these things. And so the right mix is the most important thing. What I feel like the biggest change is going on right now is what I would call kind of personalization of the journey. So one is, instead of, hey, we just want to reach as many people as possible, it's much more, hey, I want to reach this audience, this really tight audience. And when you start kind of paring that down, then you can match what your content is against that audience. So smaller audience allows, and you guys are great at this, small audience allows you really to communicate a real good value proposition to that audience. And then this one, it's slightly different. You want to say something different to them, and then slightly different to those people. So it's audience first, it's content second. And then the other biggest thing, and honestly, not a lot of people have it really worked out, is what is success? Because success for Alan on this side versus, hey, the is marketing and sales on the same side? Is everyone defining success the right way? Because as you get into these journeys, there is a lot more reporting available, and you want to make sure that you're really aligned with your media partner on what his success is, because that allows them to put the right tactics in place.
Right. Yep. No, I can see that. Is so print is not dead. There's a place for print in your mind. I mean, we always get that question. You're down 25. It's not going to go to zero.
It's not going to go to zero. It's an important part of a lot of brands. When you look at it, it really depends what you want to do and how you want to do it. There's still some, I'm a firm believer that if anything, I think print's going to, not going to bounce back to 80%. I think it's going to hold steady or go a little bit up. I do think sometimes that's just the way the market works. And we see there's a lot of engagement with the print product. So what we've done is we've limited the frequency. We went from 12 times to 6 times a year. So that's a nice way to kind of get it in the right spot. But boy, are we seeing some engagement around things that live digitally that we're now able to see in print so people can see it visually also.
That's what I was going to ask you. What does print do that the others don't quite do as well, or maybe not at all?
I think it's two things. One is it's a little bit of a longer read. So, if you want, there's some issues that are just deeper, and especially in the market, in our market. So
Yeah.
there's some things that, look, we're all addicted to 1 to 2 minute videos, and
Right,
like, oh my
right.
God, give me the information. But sometimes that just doesn't do it. It just doesn't. So there's some things that need to get into print and be displayed that way. And then it's that second part of being able to show details and stuff in print. Pro Tradecraft, which very well, we migrated Pro Tradecraft from being 100% digital to putting those details in print, and people like it. They take pictures of it, they send it to the people to say, look, this is how you do it. So it's funny, some of it's reversing the other way.
Right. And then how about digital? I mean, there's some obvious with digital, right? It, the speed, the ability to target so precisely the audience, target the audience.
Yeah, I definitely that audience. I think also what do you want to accomplish? Because people say digital, but I know at Horizon we probably had 20 different digital products, and each one had a different reason. Like white papers was much different than doing a newsletter or something on a website or an interstitial. So, knowing what you want to accomplish allows the media companies to align the right product for you, the right tactic to you, to what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
It sounds simple, but I think just my experience, I'd say about it's difficult. I'd say about 20% of the people really get it, and 80% of the people are still learning how to really optimize the digital journey.
Yeah. Well, I know that in some of the work we do, just connecting all the platforms is a challenge. I mean, there's some fundamental core infrastructure. It's all there, but making it work is not seamless. I mean, getting it to being seamless is a lot of work, a lot of management, a lot of resources and effort and so forth. So yeah, digital is it's an interesting animal. Like you say, it's very widely varied, right? Like you
It
say,
is.
white papers to e-blast, pop-up ads to all kinds of other, lead generation, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and all those things that fall under digital, like at the last part you talked about lead generation. And really, what do you want? Do you just want people to read your content? Do you want people to fill out a form? Do you want people to schedule an appointment? So having all those things can be accomplished with digital, but you got to know that up front so that you're putting the right vehicle in place.
Sure. Yeah. How about one area we haven't talked about? How about events? So I know that you all, SGC Horizon, now Endeavor, produces the big show village for those who go to the International Builder Show, IBS, out in the parking lot. It's been there for long as I've been going to IBS. I've been going to IBS a long time. Talk a little bit about events. There's a number of media companies in the events. I think maybe just focus on the event space. I'm not sure. What do we not know about events that might be interesting information for the listeners?
Yeah, I think COVID might have actually made people want to go to events more now that they didn't have that. And I know one thing about this industry, and you and I have been in it for a long time. This is a face-to-face, person-to-person industry. And look, as a media person that ran a media company, I love media. Media is a great way to reach people and to get your message out. But there is no better thing than having a conversation with somebody on a business level about what are you trying to do and how can we help you and how can we be partners. And so it's been one of our biggest accelerators since COVID. We started before COVID, but after COVID, huge accelerator. And we do them in different ways. We do the Pro Connects that you talk about, which are one-on-one kind of speed dating events that are done by market. We do large the women in residential construction, which has been an incredible success. We do for the remodeling industry. So we do the kind of traditional, what I would call conferences, and then we do Show Village. So I think it's diversity of event because each one has a different reason for being there. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, it's that conversation, that business conversation that accelerates and makes people partners quicker.
Yeah, agree. From my perspective, obviously the challenge with events is there's just a finite number of people. Now, IBS 100,000 people, right? You have opportunity to meet 100,000 people. That's huge, but ultimately it is finite versus digital just seems so expansive, right? So many you can reach. It's volume. I guess it's quantity versus quality in some respects, right?
And it's also conversion. I mean, if you really get into the conversion number of like, okay, you bring them through the funnel on digital and then you talk about business conversations and events, how many converted, it might not be shockingly different about what you're able to produce on each side.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. How about AI is in the news a lot. A lot of talk about artificial intelligence. Are you seeing anything in the media world that's utilizing it effectively, or is it too soon? Are we all still learning? We're all on the learning curve here.
It's early. I mean, obviously, the departments that have the uptake on it quicker are the marketing and creative services. Their ability for logo and for messaging, and even I'm a firm believer is when you have experts, you put out the original one out to ChatGPT, whoever it is, and then they refine it. And when you read the refinement, you're like, wow, that's pretty good. So it's a time saver. There's efficiency around that. So we're definitely seeing it in those departments. On the editorial side, it's a little scary is not the right word, but you got to be careful about how you're using AI versus how you're using kind of our editorial generated content. But it is good for like when you do interviews and being able to take all those type of notes. I know for our meetings, I don't know if you do it at DuPont for all our meetings, We had Otter and stuff like that. So it kind of recaps the meeting and the next steps. It's brilliant. I mean, it really does. It really distills a lot of information in a short amount of time.
100%.
I think, Alan, we're going to see huge changes. We haven't seen them yet, but there's no way we're not going to see it. I will take one slight left-hand turn. In some of our markets, like remodeling market, they're using AI like crazy. The remodelers are. So there's a company called Rilla that listens to sales calls and tells you how much your salesperson talks versus them, and then what the rate is of conversion versus that. And it's a straight line of less talking, more conversion. So there's that type of AI, and then scheduling, such a big thing. And AI is so good at those type of tasks.
Yeah, I know I used it. I went to a conference where I was taking a ton of notes, very, particular subject, take notes, it ends, next subject, take notes. And I read that into a meeting or Teams meeting, had it transcribed, and then fed that into AI and had it summarize. And it takes a little, it took 30 minutes, but it didn't take me 2.5, 3 hours to write my
No,
summary,
it's
and it
amazing.
was pretty good. It's pretty
Yeah,
good.
I'm having more and more fun with it just on my own, to be honest with you. And every time, I will say, every time I'm pleasantly surprised about the things that, if you give it good, it's kind of like good information in, good information out. The more detailed you are and the more you're able to give it, the more powerful, what
Agree.
back at you.
Agree. But so you don't see anybody necessarily that's kind of jumping out in a big way in the media publishing world, as far as you know,
Not
with
yet.
AI. It's hard to say, but yeah, sometimes the language is a little bit stilted or just it's just off a little bit. Yeah, like you say, you got to go in and tweak it.
You do 100%. And even with when we've tested it on editorial, boy, you better have somebody proofread it because some of it just the context just doesn't work.
Right. How about as you look around going forward in the residential construction? I mean, and I know you were heavily involved with NAHB over the past few years. As you look in the future for residential construction, what might concern you, or what are you excited to see, or what are you worried about seeing? Where are things going from your perspective?
Yeah. I will tell you one of the reasons why Horizon was so excited to buy us is because you can't outsource home building. So they
Yeah.
knew it was always going to be in the United States. Like nobody's going to come in and steal your home building thing. So we like that. And NAHB's done an incredible job really representing the industry. We're underbuilt. You know this. We're underbuilt, right? And
Right.
we keep trying. We have a nice level, but we got some headwinds, and they're kind of pretty consistent. And you'll know them all. Is the labor is a problem. How do we handle this labor thing? And with immigration and everything around immigration, where that's really where the labor used to come from, how's this going to be solved? And how are we going to get enough people to get to that 1.5 million that we really need to be building every year to really sustain kind of new household formation? So it's a puzzle. It really is. People point towards offsite construction, but that represents like 4% of our
It's
total.
small, yeah.
It's so small, and it really hasn't scaled much in the time that I've been here. So, that's going to be a problem. I think that's number one. Number two is affordability. The regulations and everything, the amount of cost it's pushing into homes is extraordinary. NAHB is fighting the good fight on it, but boy, it's an uphill battle. It really is. And when you look at that and you look at where interest rates are, you're like, how does anyone buy a starter home? How does anyone afford it? And so it's really gotten out of control. So I see those two things as, really big headwinds in our industry.
Yeah, for sure. If you were a young person coming out of school like yourself, would you advise folks to go into building products or the construction media publishing space? What would be your guidance there? What would be your advice to a young person?
Well, I'm tainted, of course.
Right.
I love the industry. I do. I think it's an incredible industry. I think the integrity of people in this industry is extraordinary. I think it still has a little bit of, in a good way, old fashioned of, hey, let's shake hands and do deals, and your word, my word is your word. So I love that. I think it's, and we all that we all know each other, and it's good. I mean, it really is, and it's supportive. I find home building fascinating. The nice thing is there's a lot of products that are consumer and professional, in this
Yeah.
marketplace. So I would recommend anyone to do it because I think it is a career and not a job. You find a lot of people that have careers here and not jobs. And it's actually unusual to find people that have jobs. It actually is inverse of most industries where people move, software, stuff like that. It's much more career-oriented type of industry.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Any, so we've covered a lot of ground here. Is there any, just want to give you an opportunity. Is there anything we haven't covered that you want to comment on with, media, publishing, construction space?
Well, I think the one area that doesn't quite fall under digital is video. And I think video has to almost have its own little swatch within each company because there's so many different types of video. You have long form, you have installation, you have animations, you have brand equity stuff. And so we know, and as this industry gets younger, which I believe eventually it will, it is aging out a little bit, is that's going to be more important for you to be able to communicate your message. So doing those social shorts, but also 1 to 2 minute really impactful videos, and have, that's the attention span we're seeing out there. And so you have to meet the attention span that's out there. And I think video is it. Definitely it. And a lot of people don't have a video strategy, don't fund video enough. And to me, it's really imperative for a successful campaign.
Interesting. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. Actually, I'm gonna ask another question because you brought it up. We didn't talk much about it. Social media. Like, what's the role of the media publishing company with respect to social? Now, we all think we can do it, just put something up on a platform and away we go, right? It's free and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
What's the role of the publishing company for social media and a building pro say in a building products client?
Yeah. So, well, one, everyone's become a publisher. And
Right.
one thing that we've learned, Alan, is that some people are good at it, a very few, and most people are not very good at it. And they just put stuff out and there's not a lot behind it or strategy and stuff like that. So I think one, just overall with any media partner you have, is ask them, how can they help you? Like, how do you do this? Put together an editorial calendar, put it out on a regular schedule, really commit to doing it. I think haphazard really hurts people. Timing hurts people. Not having the right content for the right channel really hurts people. That's something we do every day. I mean, that is just, we're always have been content people. I was looking today, Pro Builders, 89 years old. It's always been a content person. Like that's where we got our chops from. So I think the ability of companies to do it themselves is really challenging. Some can, but it's really challenging. And even if you're just asking for advice, like, hey, what should I do? Then do that. But I really feel like building out the journey has not really been paid enough attention to by a lot of building product manufacturers.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Great answer. That's great. So I think with that, we'll close, Tony. So just wanted to thank you very much for being our guest today. Again, we haven't had someone with your perspective, so it's interesting to hear to think about some of these things that go on in the industry that we just, I don't want to say take for granted, but just kind of there, always there, and we're seeing every day, but we haven't really given much thought to. So really appreciate you taking time with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Alan. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. This podcast is brought to you by DuPont Performance Building Solutions, who provides the marketplace with a full suite of weatherization, thermal, and air sealing solutions, such as DuPont Tyvek wraps, flashings, and tapes, DuPont Styrofoam brand XPS rigid foam board, and Great Stuff and Froth Pack spray foams. DuPont knows the homes you build today will need to stand the test of time, expanding, contracting, breathing, and protecting for generations to come. Be sure to check back often for new episodes. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Alan Hubble, and residentially speaking, that's a wrap.